Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. Yes, silence, my old friend. I am Johnny Numb, and joining me as always tonight is.
Billy Crash.
And Billy knows what we're talking about tonight because we plan out these shows in advance, contrary to what they wind up sounding like.
You're so right, man. We had a plan and we're like idiots.
We're like a bunch of bees that get drunk and just like buzz around in circles, kind of. So,
Pretty much.
yeah. Well, Bill, can you tell me how long it's been since we initially planned on doing this show, tonight's show?
This show we've planned on doing for over 6 weeks to maybe a 2 months, and this is our third attempt. Every time we do it, there's a fucking disaster, probably due to some meddling kids or something.
Bill, it was December 5th that we
Holy
originally.
shit!
Yeah. I have my original notes with me actually
Dude, I
for the
almost
show.
spit out my kombucha, man.
Yeah, it was before I went out and met you and we recorded in person a couple times.
Damn.
Yeah, so hopefully it's worth it's worth the wait for us. I don't know. We've sort of become jaded to the notion of what we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah, sons of bitches.
But we are going to be doing, in air quotes, Scooby Gang horror. And, you might be making your Scooby-Doo face right now going, "What, Shaggy?" And I'm going to let you explain the concept, Bill, because I honestly thought this was something you made up, and then I actually looked a little further into it, and I was like, no, it actually has a pop culture reference point, besides obviously Scooby-Doo. So why don't you take it away, Bill?
Yeah, well, if you recall Scooby Gang, going back to Scooby-Doo series, we have a group of kids. Was it Fred? He could drive him in his little scarf. He could drive the mystery van, but the point is they're not true adults yet, and that's the key. A Scooby Gang is made up of young people, anywhere from kids, Stranger Things, to teens, Monster Squad, which we'll talk about, to maybe people a little bit older. And the point is that there's an issue, they need to solve it on their own. And the thing is, these kids aren't all like, it's not like half the football team and they're all like, yeah, let's go destroy. It's more of a coming of age element involved. And that's really the key factors. The adults in there are usually the problems. If there are adults that are helpful, they're not in there too often because it's about, kids figuring things out for themselves. And the key element is teamwork because none of them could do it on their own. They all need that group, that teamwork element to boost each other up and to help each other out to make things rock. And normally these kids are not maybe the most confident in the world. Although they might have a confident team member, like, Fred, and Monster Squad, we have that as well. And we could see, the kids getting tougher a little bit more on Stranger Things, the whole coming of age experience. And that's what this is about, to solve a mystery, paranormal based with a group of people. Scooby Gang, of course, was used time after time on Buffy the Vampire Slayer television series. Initiated by Spike, you and your Scooby gang, and that's what they were. The adults weren't involved. It was Buffy. The only, she did have, Giles as an overseer, but Giles was the adult who was maybe not the most confident and most efficient adult. And so we'll get to that because I have a movie that I think is a Scooby gang film, even though it does have an adult in it, but I can explain it away.
Well, Bill, I got a couple questions for
I have a
you
couple answers, Johnny.
to stir the conversational pot a bit.
Ooh.
You know, I Maybe it was our technological frustration, but we got to a
Yeah.
point like last week where we were like, ah, oh, geez, fuck it, kind of. You know, it's like,
Right.
I think just because of us being kind of defeated by technology, the concept was kind of getting a bit stale in our heads.
That's
And
true.
I got this feeling that you weren't, I don't know how keen you were onto it, on it to begin with. Like, what are your feelings just in general, maybe about the notion of a Scooby gang, and I guess more so how it relates to the horror genre?
I love the Scooby Gang element. I mean, obviously, for a lot of people, for like, non-horror, I think, Goonies comes into play in a big bad way,
Oh yeah.
Because normally with the Scooby Gang, we have characters that we could relate to in some manner, yeah, my friend does a lot of pot. He's Shaggy, like in horror, like, so I think it's really cool. I'd love it when you have a group that comes together to, make something work. I usually hate stories actually where it's like one person has like all the answers. I hate that. Or one person who needs all the answers and he or she's going out on their own. And it just seems more natural to me to have a group of people to help you out, a group of friends. And, some people, I think, even in horror, usually there's something going on that's supernatural in nature. It's so badass. And you're like, well, what the hell do we do? If you don't band together with somebody, you're not going to live to see the next scene, So I think in horror, it's almost a necessity. I love those group movies, team movies. And it isn't necessarily people I don't think should get confused with, Scooby Gang is like, there's something going on and these people are trying to resolve it, trying to solve it. Let's say more like solve and then resolve. So if you have a movie where there's a group of kids and they're attacked by something and it's like, oh man, we're stuck in this house, what do we do? It's not like they came together to solve like a mystery or anything like that. They're in defensive mode and they're fighting for their lives. There's a whole different element to it there. So I think this has, as long as the horror has a mystery element to it, Scooby Gang's gonna work. You want to play on everyone's best abilities, and that's what's great about something like this. So and so might be a lunatic, kid, he might be a geek, a weirdo, whatever, but he could say that one thing that like, saves the group in one manner, and someone else will have something, and it all comes together, and it's like, wow, if we instead of looking at our weaknesses, we focus on our strengths. Holy shit, we can make stuff happen. And I think that's the beauty of it. It's a beautiful thing, Johnny.
Oh, Bill, don't get so sappy on me now, man. Here, Bill,
Whatever.
let me give you a hug across Skype.
Oh, yeah, get off me.
Well, okay, that was interesting because I wasn't sure if you actually liked it as a concept. And I know, like other things we talk about, the two big components are like character and story. You know,
Right.
we can watch Scooby-Doo when we're kids, and even as kids catch on to the fact that it's going to be a guy in the mask at the end. But at the same time, we keep watching because of, you know, how the stories play out. You know, as long as the story plays out differently, and you know, Fred drives the van, and
Right.
Daphne just stands around looking good,
The
and
eye candy, yeah. That's the only problem I have with the original Scooby-Doo. We have the eye candy, and well, Velma's smart, so she's got to be overweight. And it's like, what the hell is going on, man? And that's why, there was stock character elements to that, but
And Shaggy was the stoner, like you said, yeah.
totally. And yeah, it's like the thing that keeps it all together is the dog. It's like Scooby-Doo, yes it is. It's all about you, buddy. But so that's why, like, if you're going to have a create like a team, because that's what you're doing, of young people, it's like, make them real and make them rock. I mean, and I think that's why there is a draw for Stranger Things, because you have, these kids that are relatable. It's like, man, I played D&D at that time and all that stuff, and I love the male frustration too amongst these little kids, like, screw you back, and it's like they're lucky any of them are alive, and I'd love to see the cool thing is the growth that they have and all, and I understand the nostalgia of Stranger Things and why people like it, But if you're going to do another Scooby Gang movie, it had better be different.
Well, and I think by extension, Bill, and I know we did a show on this, but I mean, I think the reason the It movie was so popular last year and made buku bucks, I think exceeding even the generous estimates, you know, people had for it or expectations. And I feel like it had less to do with Stephen King's novel, though I'm sure people went out because they were fans of the book and the miniseries from years before. But right. I think it was because, Finn Wolfhard's in it, you know, and it's like it's another sort of Stranger Things kind of scenario in a lot of ways. And that's, I think, what brought, you know, parents and their, you know, teens to theaters to see that. And I actually think that's a good example of a Scooby Gang tale.
It's the perfect example. The only thing is you again have like that group that, you know, it can't be too big, you know. This isn't Scooby Gang by any means, but if we look at, you know, a lot of fans, some fans are finally getting upset with like The Walking Dead. And one of the problems is they have so many freaking characters, like who's getting airtime? You know, the beloved Daryl Dixon, you know, like character, he's like, he walks through a frame, you know, every other episode now, you know, and it's like, and he says like two words, you know, but
call me Snake.
You know, so it's like, and you know, some of those actors are probably getting a little bit bored. Like, when do you need me on set? Wait, there's five episodes, there's 20 episodes and you only need me for two? What's going on? You know, it's like. So I don't know, but that's like too big. And you know, I noticed that with It, you know, the oh my gosh, I forgot the character's name.
Which who was it, Bill?
That's it, I forgot his name, but I'm gonna find out right now, Johnny. And it is Chosen Jacobs, who played Mike Hanlon.
Right.
You know, he was pretty much like off to the wayside for like almost the whole movie. You know, and he had like, you know, and he was like almost like a sort of like an afterthought, you know, with the rest of the gang. And that I didn't really care for. It's like, you know, bring him in, make him a part of it, and let's have these, you know, group of young people figure it all out, you know, with Beverly and company, you know?
Yeah, and you know, Bill, that was a source of like popped up one day and then it was kind of forgotten about. But the characteristics of Mike in the book, Mike is actually the one who's all interested in the history of the town, and all of that got transposed onto the Ben character movie for some reason. Yeah,
That's odd, and that sucks. But
yeah,
I mean, because they had a lot of kids, man, and you know, they could have If you're going to do that, then why did you need, you know, why did you need a Mike Hanlon character then? You could have written him out. Because you know how it is, you know, when it comes to taking a book and making it into a movie, you need, you know, characters need to go, you know, just because of time and everything else. Like, one of my favorite examples is People versus Larry Flint. I know this isn't horror, but, you know, you'll get the concept. Throughout the movie, his attorney is... played by Ed Norton, when in reality, over all of that time, he had like five different attorneys. But it would be so like, do you want to keep introducing new attorneys? No, that, you know, they wanted to keep it simple and focus on other elements and themes. So you comprise those five into one, you know. So,
well, and even with a story like that, Bill, they usually have something at the end of the movie saying that, you know, this is based on actual persons and events, but due to for dramatic purposes or in the interest of time, it's been condensed and characters have been, I think at one movie I saw said, yeah, some characters have been merged into one character, you know, for purposes of this telling. So, yeah.
And we even see it in storytelling overall. Like I didn't like the original Conjuring film. First of all, nothing's conjured. I don't understand what's going on with the title.
A lot of money, Bill.
Yeah. Damn straight. But like the story didn't take place in like record time. It took place like 7-8 year period or more. And like they had to condense all of that, you know, crap of what allegedly happened into, you know, a palpable film, you know, so that stuff happens. So in the Scooby Gang, hopefully it's written so we have enough characters where we all get to hear them. They all have their strengths and they're all part of this team. and get stuff done appropriately and not have to like sit out so much, like, you know, Mike Hanlon did in It.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bill. You brought up some really good examples of how it's all about that intertwining of personalities and talents, basically, you know. Something that might not come to one person about a situation, oh, that'll be someone else will like know it in a jiffy, basically. So, you know, so it's all about that. And then it's like how they interact with the, you know, their disparate kind of gifts, which, you know, I think is, right. You know, it's evident in It. It's evident in like the Goonies and Monster Squad and all of that. So,
yeah. And even it's funny because, you know, the movie doesn't count as a Scooby Gang film because it was, but it's a twist on it. First of all, they're all adults, and secondly, they didn't like come together on their voluntarily, which is what a Scooby Gang does, because they know each other and everything else. But the movie Cube, the Canadian film, it was like forced Scooby Gang, you know, because like as these characters wake up in this cubed room, realizing that there's just one cube after another, and they're like, where are we, what are we going to eat, how do we get out, and all of this stuff. As they go through this and they have their interchanges and their dialogue, they realize that each person has a particular strength that makes the group work and could save them and help them maybe get through it. So whatever the big brother person was, or mastermind or counsel that put them in this place, it's like, okay, we got to figure out what our strengths are, put our biases aside and everything else, and, you know, hopefully we can work together and get out of here. And so that was cool in that regard. That was a nice twist on the Scooby Gang theme for adults, I thought.
You know what, Bill? I kind of have another one that might fall into the contrary, the flipping of the ages, I guess you could say.
Let's do it.
What do you think of Cooties from 2014?
Really, that was 4 years ago already?
I can't believe it either.
Shit, man. That sounds great to me, man. I like that.
Because it's like instead of like the kids banding together to combat an evil, the evil is the children who've been turned into.
That's perfect, man.
Flesh eating, you know, zombies by some bad chicken McNuggets.
Those little shits, man.
But I love how it's the teachers and the faculty who become this offbeat group of characters who have to band together. Not all of them like each other, and all of them have their quirks, including the Lee Wannell's one teacher who's like, he's like a science teacher or something. And he seems to have like a touch of Asperger's or something like that, because he'll misunderstand certain phrases and words people use, and he'll be like, oh, he jumps to this other interpretation of it. Oh, and yeah. It's often pretty entertaining. But he's a smart character. He's not played as the dummy for laughs kind of thing. Yeah, I really like that movie.
Oh, that was a lot of fun, man. Yeah, Elijah Wood killed it, as he always does. Rainn Wilson and Alison Pill, man. They're just a great little group, man. And it was like they were the adult Scooby Gang. And that was funny. That's really a good movie. I hope people check that out, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I think the thing is with that one, it's probably someone, who do I have down? I didn't write down the writer's name, damn it. But
for Cooties?
Yeah.
That was Lee Wannell and Ian Brennan. And that was that group.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, so I just really liked it because, you know, and not all the characters stay the same either, you know.
No.
They all have their arcs, and they have their conflicts, and they got to work their shit out like a bunch, you know, kids would, like kids who are fighting amongst each other would. Because Rainn Wilson's dating Alison Pill, and Alison Pill is Elijah Wood's ex, so there's this whole like
dynamic.
Yeah, this whole romantic / love triangle / jealousy thing going on between the two guys, and I gotta say, Bill, one of my favorite parts of that movie is the opening where Elijah Wood is living with his mom and he's given her a draft of this novel to read. And he's like, "Mom, tell me what you think." And she's like, "Oh, well, it's great. It's really great." And he's like, "Mom, tell me what you're really thinking." She goes off for like a minute or two, just listing all the things she didn't like about the book. And that is like so real right
Oh,
there.
that's beautiful. Yeah. Oh no, I loved it. That movie's a blast. A lot of fun. Great comedy horror. Well crafted. And like you said, they did a great twist on the Scooby Gang and the whole like, you know, adults in charge and adults like, you know, succumbing to the kids. It's like, you know, can you kill a child? It was like, you know, a comedy version of that, you know.
You know, and it's interesting, Bill, because back in the 1970s, like with Assault on Precinct 13 and other stuff, the killing of a kid in a movie like was a really big controversial thing. I think we've kind of come a long way as far as that's concerned, because I seem to see a lot more children getting buying it in movies, like a lot, current films, and they're getting their R ratings. So.
Yeah, usually, however, still because of the stigma, you know, and especially in the United States, you know, with you know, us being so you know, puritanical based, you know,
Oh yeah.
if a kid's gonna buy it, he's gonna buy it off screen, you know.
Right.
But unless you have a damn good reason to do so, and that's why John Carpenter would Assault on Precinct 13, I was just like, I remember watching that like, damn, you know, like I'm invested, you know, it's like, you know, he took the chance and he crushed it, you know.
Yeah, it's like that's Carpenter saying, "Okay, shit just got real and I'm not fucking around." And
Yeah, and that means anything can happen. Anytime I see a kid get killed in a movie, it's like, okay, if they do it, if they're not teasing, and like, if especially if it's in the beginning of a movie, it means anything can happen. They're just like, okay, gloves are off for real, and you know, so be prepared. And some, you know, even The Walking Dead, you know, they dropped the ball on that, you know, but you know, because the first scene, you know, is Andrew Lincoln's character, you know, blasting a little kid zombie between the eyes, and I'm like, oh man, anything can happen. This is gonna be great. And boy, was I ever wrong. You know, it's like,
They should have saved it till the end, I
I
guess.
don't know, but
Yeah, but I think that's, like how Kim Richards in that movie is just
she's awesome.
she's totally like dressed like Little House on the Prairie too, with her pigtails and
I know. She's
everything.
getting freaking ice cream, man.
Yeah, and how yeah, that all of that stuff plays into how awful and how much of a jump and a shock that moment is.
Yeah, that movie's got he created one hell of an atmosphere in that, man.
Yeah. So anyway, Bill.
So anyway, I have, because we're going on this little stint of like sort of anti or different takes on the Scooby Gang mythos. One of my favorites, and I think this fits in perfectly, is Fright Night from 1985.
Oh, good one.
You know, Tom Holland, you know, wrote and directed. It's a great film. It's a blast. It holds up. And we have William Ragsdale as Charlie Brewster, who thinks a vampire moved in next door. So, and that was played by Chris Sarandon, you know. And, you know, it's, his Scooby Gang is comprised of just three people: Amanda Bearse and Stephen Jeffries, who plays the classic evil Ed. And but the thing is, they need someone, and he needs somebody with power, somebody who knows this stuff. And he goes to a regional television host, Peter Vincent, played by the late great Roddy McDowall, who does this horror show. And he's like, well, he's got the answers. And of course, he goes to Roddy McDowall, Peter Vincent. He's like, you know, you need to help me. A vampire moved in next door. And he's like, what the hell's wrong with you, you little shit? Get out of here, you know? And the cool thing is, the reason it works as a Scooby Gang movie is, even though Roddy McDowall plays the adult, he has lost his faith. He can't believe that a vampire could be real. So the real him comes out, and he's a scared rabbit, man. And he's like, oh my God. You know, and when he realizes, like, oh man, this guy is a vampire. What do we do? You know, it's just, he's almost like a kid, you know? And so he really fits in well with the whole Scooby Gang mythos. And the strong character is actually William Ragsdale's Charlie Brewster, who's like, no, man, we like he moved in next door. He might eat my mom. You know, it's like we got to do something, you know. And that's why I really love about it. Amanda Beers, you know, she plays Amy Peterson, you know, a nice strong character in there as well. Yeah. And, you know, who might be seduced by Chris Sarandon's Jerry Dandridge. And, of course, Stephen Jeffries is like, he's the lunatic of the group, you know, Evil Ed, who's...
You're so cool, Billy.
The movie's friggin' great. And I think it's a really great take. I think it counts as a definite Scooby Gang movie because of how that adult Roddy McDowell's set up. Otherwise, the only adults in there are the big bad, who is, you know, the vampire, and that's it. And it's a great coming of age, especially for the Amy Peterson, Charlie Brewster characters. And well, you know, watch it to see what happens to little old Stephen Jeffries.
You know, Bill, you brought up an interesting point about Peter Vincent and how he's lost his, you know, he's done the Breakfast Club thing where he's grown up into an adult and his heart has died.
Yeah, damn good way of putting it.
But, you know, we were talking about Stranger Things earlier a little bit. And, you know, what's interesting is that maybe Peter Vincent, even though I don't think it's really explored in the film at all as a bit of backstory, maybe he got into the job as a late night horror show host because he maybe had a love for that sort of stuff as a child. Maybe he grew up watching that stuff, mm-hmm. and that you know, influenced, you know, maybe it could have been something that fell into his lap, or it could have been something that was like, well, you know, I want to do this, you know, the Zachary routine or whatever.
Yeah, well, that, you know, that'd be a good prequel, man, if they made something like that. And it's like, it's almost like he's looking for this Holy Grail his entire life, and then this kid, I have the Holy Grail. He's like, that ain't it. You know, he's just like, no, that's not it, man. Get away from me, you little shit. You know, and it's like, dude, this is the Holy Grail, whatever, you know? And, yeah, well, I like that.
Well, and then there's that sense of kind of like the bullshit fantasy versus the bullshit reality of something too. It's like when we're watching something on TV and it's like, oh, this is like fucking awesome, you know, like this is an awesome horror movie. And then right. if you're confronted with something like that in real life, it'd be like, oh, you know, you go to shit in your pants kind of mode, kind of, because it's all of a sudden it's there in front of you.
Absolutely. Can't argue that at all, man.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Johnny.
Well, Bill, we seem to be working kind of backwards here, and maybe you can school me on this one if I'm mislabeling it. I was thinking about John dies at the end.
What do you think? Well, he does die at the end.
Spoiler.
I don't think it's a spoiler when you get it right in the title. Yeah, that could be it. Yeah, because he has to, you know. But it's pretty much almost, is that more of a buddy movie?
Well, you know, they do have there are the two guys, and there is the one character, the Dr. Marconi character, played by Clancy Brown. You know, but he doesn't really show up kind of till the close. I mean, he shows up at the beginning and then he kind of shows up at the end. But so maybe you're right on that, Bill. It is a bit more of a buddy movie. There are other characters, but they don't necessarily, it's not necessarily like the whole group goes out to uncover the paranormal or extraterrestrial menace of the piece. Okay.
Well, we could save that for our buddy horror movies. We didn't do that one yet. So.
Bill.
Put that on a list. Great, we have a show. We ran out of ideas, everybody. We just got a new show.
That's really what's been. That's really why we've been dragging our feet on this one for
get
so long.
Get out of here. This is a movie. I don't know if you've seen this. It goes against the Scooby Gang mythos only because it's all adults, but they're all children inside, so it actually works. And this is listed as a comedy. It does have its horror elements in it and moments. It really is like a grown-up Scooby-Doo gang on a hunt. And what this is a ghost team from 2016. Did you see it?
I haven't even heard of it. Is it
Oh.
US or is it a foreign
Oh,
film,
it's
Bill?
US, baby. It's directed by Oliver Irving, and he co-wrote with Peter Warren, and it's about a paranormal obsessed guy who gets together his own little Scooby gang team to go on an investigation, and just to find a ghost and prove that it exists and all. And he gets involved, and it's a starring John Hader, who was the Napoleon Dynamite. It has Justin Long in it, who is always who's always friggin' amazing. David Krumholtz, Melanie Diaz, and Amy Sedaris is phenomenal as Victoria in it. This movie is a blast. I loved it. It's funny as hell. It's relatable as hell. And it's great how they all band together using their individual skills to try and figure out what's going on. And it's like they really did a Scooby movie, Scooby-Doo film. Although a real live heavy live action one, I believe, is coming out with a hot Velma and everything. But it's a blast. It's a blast. What he discovers, what's really going on, who's the man behind the mask, all that fun stuff. So I loved it. I thought it's a blast. It's a PG-13 film, but it fits in, and it does have that. It's almost like the Addams Family. It's like it's that creepy cool thing, but it's not horror or anything like that. So.
Well, it sounds a little bit there. It sounds like there's a little bit of Ghostbusters in the tone, maybe
It's
going through that too.
better. It's better than Ghostbusters.
I'm shaking my fist at you right now, Bill.
Whatever.
You know, Bill, one I really love, and I do think this qualifies,
Let's do it. Bring it.
is a Hossu from 1977.
Absolutely. Why does it qualify, Johnny?
Because it's essentially a bunch of schoolgirls going to one of the girls' aunt's places out in the country for the weekend, and all sorts of strange shit starts happening even before they get there.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, we're not at our destination yet, and I'm freaked out. Let's go home.
And a guy gets turned to bananas literally at one point, so
Boom. Yeah,
but
man.
I just loved how fucking weird this movie was.
It is, and I think that's why it's such a cult favorite. I mean, it has such a following, man, around the globe.
And it's bizarre because it seems to be taking place in a sort of surreal, the tone is very surreal to it. Like all this stuff happens and sometimes people don't react to it like they're in reality at all. So I don't know if they're talking, I don't know if they're trying to set a tone like it's this weird weekend and maybe we were seeing shadows on the walls, but our imaginations turned it into this whole big out of control, like phantasmagoric nightmare of a weekend kind of. Go ahead.
But what do you think this says about, because this is a Scooby gang made up solely of women.
Oh, that's a good point. And even the
And
actually, go
it's a
ahead.
rite of passage.
Yeah, and each character has their specific set of skills. Actually, most of them are named after their talents or
Kung
defining
Fu,
tr
baby.
or and what's the one girl's name, Doc, because she's the smart one,
Well, we have.
or the professor.
Yeah, we have the prof. Yeah, we've got Mac. Melody, sweet, gorgeous. Fantasy. Yeah.
And is Mac the one who likes to eat?
Her original name was Mac and Cheese.
Okay, because I was thinking,
No, I'm
I thought
playing,
you.
man. I'm fucking.
Well, I was thinking of McDonald's for some reason because I think she's eating a sandwich when we see her going to the aunt's house. But
Oh my God, mac and cheese. Oh, that some of these jokes are really just for me, man.
well, no, I was like, maybe it was mac and cheese. It makes as much sense as anything else in Hossu, but it's just really, you got a good point, Bill, because the Scooby Gang, as it originated in Scooby-Doo, was a as an integrated group of boys and girls. Yeah, I don't know. What do you actually, that's a good
That
question.
this
What do
this
you
would be
think
a
it's
show, man. This would be its own show because, you know, we have these young women going to a house, confronting mother, you know, who also plays Gorgeous and Kimiko Ikigami, and I think it says a lot about, you know, women becoming a woman, growth. I think we even need to have a woman on a show when we talk about it, you know, to get to
Oh,
the
yeah.
real depths of it, you know. It's a lot more than that, but it definitely is a Scooby Gang movie because these girls, you know, band together to you know, figure stuff out and save themselves.
So yeah, that's true, Bill. What do you think about the repeated use of the white cat in the film, who is the familiar of the aunt who's causing all the weird stuff to happen around the house?
Man, it makes me think of The Legacy with the white cat.
Good call, yeah.
Oh, another.
Hello, nurse.
Oh, man. Dude, even as a kid, I was so in love with her, man.
Oh, wow, Bill.
Dude, man, with that nurse. Yeah, it's like, order me around, please, nurse.
Was going to say, cut my throat to get that chicken bone out of it, yeah.
But he didn't have the chicken. Oh, no.
But what about the cat, Bill?
What about the cat? Well, what do cats represent, Johnny?
Evil. I
Oh,
don't know.
complete. Oh, that's great. Glad you did your research. You're gonna research this since December. I don't know what cats were.
I just want to cuddle with mine every time I come home from work. That's all I gotta say.
Well, in Japan, well, first of all, cats, it's a symbol of spiritual power, freedom, love of liberty, but it means bad luck in Japan.
Okay.
Now white is also representative of death in Japan. You know, in the Asian world, you know, white is associated with death. You know, so that's why Lucy Liu wears white in Kill Bill, and such. You know, she's the bad character. How come she's not wearing black? Because she's not in the West. That's why. So white cat, that's not representing anything good. And because we have, what is it, you know, death rides a pale horse, a white horse, so, you know,
Right.
it can leak, the death element does leak into Western culture. Which was actually a good sleight of hand in the Legacy film. But so that's it. So it's like, whatever they, you know, is this what Mother represents? You know, is she trying to kill these girls, or just kill the girl inside them, and so they could become women? You know, what is it? Is this a rite of passage for them to become strong, powerful women? I mean, there's a whole bunch to explore here.
You know, Bill, and yeah, it's a really rich film as far as interpretation goes. There's just so
It's
much
endless.
yeah, there's just so much going on in that film. But you know, near the end, it starts to get really crazy, and like, there's a painting of the cat on the wall, and it starts spitting blood, and eventually, the whole house becomes flooded with blood. And you know, it makes you wonder when you're talking about coming of age. Think of Carrie. Think of Ginger Snaps. Think of the use of metaphor.
Menstrual cycles, yeah.
Yeah, metaphor, the metaphor quality of all that stuff. So I think that's a, you know, for the purposes of our
Write it down, Johnny. Menstrual horror. I'm not
Yeah, I
kidding.
know. Yeah. I just think that's a really a keen observation, yeah.
We have to have another female guest on for that, so we don't look like morons. Or
You know,
less. At least we'll look less stupid than we normally do.
as opposed to the usual, yeah.
Yeah, the usual mayhem. Oh, man.
Well, Bill, what else do you have?
I got nothing, man.
Okay, fine.
No, I'm kidding. No,
The end.
urban legend does have as bad as those movies are, they do take on a Scooby Gang element to it, you know, of college kids coming together, like, oh my God, we got to figure out what's going on with this legend, you know, and they work together. But that's sort of getting into dangerous territory because it's like, how many of them are red shirts, and they're not going to make it past scene one, two, or three, you know? But there is, in the urban legend films, there is that element of Scooby gangedness, you know?
Well, Bill,
God,
is
those are
some.
the first one's 20 years old, man.
Yeah, it was what it was 97?
Yeah, Jared Leto, Alicia Witt, Rebecca Gayhart, of course, man. Tara Reid.
Natasha Gregson Wagner, who I love.
She loves you too, Johnny, she told me.
God, see, check her out in Another Day in Paradise, the Larry Clark film. She's fantastic.
And of course, we had Robert Englund in there as a professor.
Yeah, I've never seen. I heard the second one wasn't really a like actually a true sequel to it, but yeah, I haven't seen any of those.
Yeah, you're better off. Yeah, I saw one of them, and it was one of those. Oh my God! You know, it's like I wish I could fall asleep, but people are screaming, you know, because it was just so awful. What
Well,
else do
Bill,
you have, man?
you know, I got a couple, and I'm gonna call
Let's.
the herd. I'm gonna call the herd a bit actually, but one that I think really fits is 2014's It Follows.
Ah.
I haven't watched it in a while, but
Yeah, that's perfect, man. That does take a Scooby Gang feel, man.
yeah, and because there is the sense of I mean, not everybody—not everybody makes it to the end credits of the film, but most of the characters actually do because of the, I guess, the specificity of the premise.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, through having sex, you start to be followed or stalked. It's sort of like a metaphysical STD you're given. But it's kind of you start being followed by people, and the people who follow you want to kill you, basically.
Yeah.
So how do you, it's that sort of Ouroboros kind or sort of conundrum where it's like, well, what do you do? Well, do you sleep with anybody you possibly can to put as much distance between you and the follows as possible, or do you try to actually fight back against this, even though it makes no logical sense. And
Yeah. I mean, the cinematography in this movie was awesome, and I loved the whole feel of it. I just wish they hadn't screwed up certain things in the third act, but it's definitely a Scooby Gang movie.
we'll have to talk about what you think they screwed up,
Oh, I
Bill,
know
then.
what they screwed up. Man, you can't. You shoot a bullet into a friggin' water, man. It's not gonna travel. It's gonna almost come to a dead stop. You know, it's like it's not gonna travel 15 friggin' feet. Oh, what, you know, I was like, come on, man. You know.
Bill, was Saving Private Ryan lying to us then?
Well, that's the interesting part.
They were closer to the surface when those bullets hit, though.
That's the thing, because I know MythBusters did it. They were taking, but they were sitting right on top of the water and they're shooting into it, and the bullets are just hitting the water and just like fizzing
Yeah.
out. And I'm
Yeah.
wondering if you have a high, you know, if you have a rifle with a large round, like a 308 or something like that, 30-06, and you're firing it, and it has time to gain its momentum and, you know, its trajectory. You know, when it hits that water. Can it sail for a little bit, you know? So that I don't know, but I know what they were doing was it wouldn't work in the movie. And that pissed me off. I'm like, come on. A little bit of investigation would have figured this out. You're ruining your own damn movie.
Well, Bill, you know what? I've seen more of a prevalence of that excuse me, phenomenon. Just I it Any movie that seems to feature a water scene that's either action or horror at this point and involves a gun seems to have bullets whizzing by while people are underwater.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's been becoming more of a thing lately, but
I don't know. Well, 'cause it looks cool, but I've even seen videos not MythBusters related of guys underwater firing weapons and the guy's 2 feet away and there's just this massive explosion outside of the muzzle and the bullet's just pretty much like sinking like a stone, you know, 'cause it just, you know, it's can't cut through the water as it can cut through the air, you know? So it's just a different animal, so to speak.
Well,
Different element for
and I
sure.
kind of like that moment in No Country for Old Men where Josh Brolin's like just he's trying to evade these drug cartel guys, and he starts swimming in this river, and he's being followed by this attack dog, basically. And then he gets out of the river and he's got a gun in his pants, but he doesn't shoot the gun. He has to like clean the gun like quickly and, blow in the chamber and everything like that to get it to work properly. So,
I hate when that happens.
but yeah, I know that happened to me the other day.
I know it does, Johnny, because people don't know this, but you work for the state, but you're not necessarily at the desk.
Billy, I am the danger.
Say my name. I am the one who knocks. Okay, Mr. White, just relax. Go get some chemo.
I like I said, Bill, and you at least agree with that aspect of it follows because it's a bunch of kids, basically, a bunch of actually, the oldest teenager seems to be the main character, played by Makiya Monroe.
Yeah.
The other ones seem to be like just maybe a year or two younger than her, and they're able to go along with the situation because hey, they're not the ones being followed, so what do they have to lose by getting involved with this? And it's a sort of altruism because they want to help their friend, see if they can actually beat this thing, and I guess.
Yeah, and that's probably the truest element of a Scooby Gang film is it's like they're not just working together, but they'll do what they can to, save somebody else. It's a team spirit at its absolute best. I mean, that's what Scooby Gang's all about. I mean, and I think we saw that time and time again in Joss Whedon's brilliant television series, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where they were constantly putting themselves in harm's way for each other, because and that's what I loved, it was like this element of selflessness. So how could you not root for any character on that show?
Well, Bill, that brings up maybe another question. Do you think this, I guess, as with anything else, this type of a film or type of story, if you will, can be, I guess, can be kind of tainted if the story is told with cynicism or whatever. So, do you think the altruism and sort of I don't know, the notion of hope in the situation is what makes these films work their best or shows work their best?
Yeah, absolutely. If you have a few good characters and you know that they're all helping each other out, you're rooting for them as a team. But there's always the possibility that, unlike Scooby-Doo, someone in one of these films might not make it. And I think that has a lot of bearing, on the story. But I think it works really well because of that. I just love it.
Yeah.
It's
Well,
like when
Bill,
it's like playing D&D, like on Stranger Things. You can't do a D&D dungeon on your own. I mean, you can, but I'm a fighter, but I'm not a magic user or an illusionist or a cleric or whatever hell else you want to be. And I'm just human. I'm not a halfling or an elf or a gnome, and I don't have certain skills. And it's like, so if we band together, we can make something happen, and that's great. It's almost like King Arthur's Round Table on a small, small scale.
Well, it's interesting, Bill, to extend the D&D notion.
Let's do it.
One of my favorite video games from I never beat it, but I always loved playing it because it was so offbeat and I didn't feel like there was much else like it on the original 8-bit Nintendo was Maniac Mansion, which was a computer game before they made the Nintendo version, but that game was kind of a Scooby Gang thing as well. I think you're able to pick from like six or seven very different characters who each have their own skill sets. I think you pick like three maybe, and it's like, well, you just have to figure out which skills the characters can bring to a certain situation to make it to the next room or whatever, or get through that locked door. What do you have to do? How do you use that person and their talents to win the game, basically? And I'm thinking you could, the way it was set up, you could win the game using any combination of characters. You just got to figure out how to, how to apply their skills. And I thought that game was awesome. It was just so weird because it was like mad scientist 1950s B movie stuff,
Nice.
this the main character's girlfriend was a cheerleader who'd been kidnapped by the evil doctor.
Bastard.
There's like a nuclear reactor in the basement. So there's
I
a bunch
love
of
it.
yeah, there's a bunch of disembodied tentacles who roam the house, and one wants to start a rock band.
That's great, man.
There's just you should there's probably a Wikipedia page for it. Just check it out. It's
Yeah.
it was such a fun game to play because it was so offbeat, and it had this really interesting sense of humor that you really didn't see in games of that era, I felt.
That's
So,
cool. You
but
reminded me actually of
go ahead.
it was out this summer, and it's not a horror movie, but a great Scooby Gang film was Jumanji.
Okay.
Did you see it?
No, I haven't seen either one of
It's
them.
oh my God, what the Johnny, jeez.
I've heard good things. Actually, I'm surprised to hear you say good things about the new one, so
I
now I gotta see
loved
it.
it. I
Yeah.
loved it, man. It was such a blast. Great Scooby Gang movie. And it was such a yeah, Welcome to the Jungle, with The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, and Jack Black kills it, and Karen Gillan. Gee, you need to see this movie, man.
Well, I loved her in Oculus, so yeah.
Yeah. Oh, her comedy chops are fantastic, man. And Kevin Hart, of course. It's just such a blast, but it's, again, it's these kids. And the cool thing is they have these adult bodies. And it's great. They're all almost like the opposite of who they are personally, in real life as a kid,
Yeah.
so it's great. It teaches the thematic elements of of learning humility and acceptance and just on and on. It's just fantastic what they did with this little comedy adventure movie, and it's great.
Yeah, and I guess
Loved it.
do you think that's something that resonated with a lot of people, Bill? Because that movie made a lot of money.
It made a lot of money, and I think, and it because it really worked. The characters were great. You fell in love with them. The story's a blast. The comedy's fantastic. The adventure element's great, and it was just so much fun to just see what that how they all have to go through it. Not a team rite of passage, but an individual rite of passage to become a better person, as teenagers. And it was just I just thought it was really, really well crafted. But so yeah, and that was a writing team of Chris McKenna, Eric Summers, and Scott Rosenberg, and they just crushed it, man. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. Easy.
Yeah, on the other hand, Ready Player One is not a good Scooby Gang movie, so don't see
Oh, I
it.
wasn't I didn't plan on seeing it. I think Spielberg lost his when he approved the script for what was it, Jurassic World or Island, whatever the last piece of crap was.
World, yeah.
World. Oh my God, it was abysmal. It was stupid. It was awful. It was pathetic. It was weak, trite. I mean, just so horrifically bad. I was like, he approved this? So I can't trust anything that he does anymore.
Well, and when you run out of ideas, what do? You weaponize, you have someone who wants to weaponize the dinos and make money off of it, because that's the oldest thing in the book.
Yeah, I mean, you have these pterodactyls, and like a pterodactyl, what would they go after? They would go after the slow, the weak, and the lightweight, and that means they'd be picking up children, babies. But no, not in a, no. We're gonna try and go grab an adult who's like 200 pounds, and like get the fuck out of here, man. It's just stupid, and you knew nothing was gonna happen to any of those kids. It had bad dialogue, stupid subplots. It was fucking.
That was the
Oh, it
thing,
made
Bill.
me
I think,
spit, man.
you know what? It came up on, I think, one of our year-end shows a bunch of years back, but the thing that bothered me was you have this hybrid dinosaur that's like the final boss of the movie.
Yeah.
And I was thinking the screenwriters, even though they gave me no reason to think this way, that they were going to kind of go into the psychology of what this dinosaur was thinking. This thing that never should have been yet was. How does it? Yeah, it's like it didn't ask to be made and someone made it. I thought you could tell a really interesting story about just what's try and allude to what's going on inside the head of the dinosaur, but no, of course, it's just the big bad guy. And you
Yeah.
gotta kill it. You gotta kill it at the end. What I'm thinking about is more like a Far Side cartoon. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could have been a Frankenstein's monster thing, and
Yeah.
And they were like, no, let's be as stupid and pathetic and weak and trite as possible. Bunch of shithead fucking. So, yeah, anything Spielberg's doing, unless he does another drama, I'll give that a shot. But when it comes to these family-friendly little kid movies, these made me puke for 2 decades. I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, Ready Player One, there's a lot of unintentional irony going through that film.
Oh,
and
God.
It's not, I don't think much of it was deliberate, and that's not a good thing. So
yeah, too bad.
It's like the filmmakers weren't in on the
joke.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So anyway, Bill, did you want to, what are your final thoughts? Do you have anything else you want to say about Scooby Gang Horror? I'm sort of surprised that the conversation was a bit. We were lively, like a Scooby Gang of Two, perhaps.
Yay, Johnny! Whatever.
Thanks, Billy.
Yeah, hold my roller skate key, please. Anyway, I don't even know where the hell that came from.
What are you doing on roller skates in the first place?
No, I think the Scooby Gang movies aren't going to go away, but do them cool and do them right. And we've had great Scooby Gang movies, you know, whether horror or not, you know, like Goonies and Jumanji, or you know, something else. They just
Deathgasm, Bill.
Deathgasm. A Fiend on Film. Dave Kay's, he hated that thing, man. He's like, he's spitting blood right now.
It's not bleak enough. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Anyway.
Deathgasm was a lot of fun, man. I enjoyed that one.
Oh, I loved it, yeah.
Yeah, so, definitely check that out. And it's great. Again, you know, you have these... Again, you have what I consider the real anti-hero is a reluctant hero. It's not someone who's a jerk, you know, and is forced to become a hero, but it's somebody who's like has no heroic qualities, who has no choice but to be a hero, especially when someone else's life is on the line or even their own. And that's the beauty of, I think, a Scooby Gang. And we need more of it because, you know, we live in a culture now that's lacks empathy on the one hand. Yet on the other hand, there's a lot of it. And I see it every day. But I see this disparity of people being jerks towards each other. And yet I see people being really nice towards each other as strangers and such. And I think Scooby Gang movies could help us, you know, maybe especially in American society, you know, maybe give each other more of a break.
You know, Bill, that's a really good point. I wasn't, you know, I just think to what you were saying, cynicism is a real en vogue thing right now. That's sort of, it's, and I'm not saying it hasn't always been there, and I'm not saying I'm not sometimes cynical myself, but just the fact that it seems to permeate everything now, it's like becoming harder to like pull what is good out of things because everything is dour, everything is an argument, everything is depressing, everything sucks. So
yeah.
And maybe on a weird subconscious level, that's another thing that was, you know, bringing people back for season two of Stranger Things or bringing people out to see it, because you know you want to have that sense of triumph, but have, you know, maybe have it feel like it's been earned.
And faith restored in humanity.
Right. There, it's like, you know, you don't have to restore hope completely. Not everybody has to get out of it alive. But at the end, you kind of have that, there's that glimmer of things, you know.
Well, you know what, Johnny? You made me think of what to me is the ultimate Scooby Gang story of all. And I wish it should be filmed. And I wish it... Ray Bradbury was alive to see such a film made. He wrote a book called The Halloween Tree, and when I read that when I was a kid, it blew me away. It's a Scooby Gang film. A friend goes missing, and they go through these friends and their journey on their Scooby Gang journey to find their friend. They go through how Halloween is celebrated in all different cultures. So it's fantastic. It's a great lesson about how to, you know, how things are different in the world. And it's just really beautiful. And Ray Bradbury did such an excellent job. And the spoiler alert for the book. but it's so potent and it sticks to me to this day. In the end, the friends reach a point where I think they end up in Mexico. I think it's at the end, and it's the Day of the Dead festival, and you know, they have the sugar skulls and all.
Yeah.
And they're told that they could save their friend if they each eat the sugar skull with their name on it. But if they do, they will each lose 1 year from their lives. And it's such a poignant moment, because these are kids. These aren't teenagers. These are younger than that. And they have to make a choice if they're going to give up a year of their own life, you know, for somebody else. And I remember that just so stuck with me, because it's like, could I do that, you know, for somebody else? And, you know, I think the answer is yes. I mean, you know, who wouldn't want to, you know? But, you know, for being young people and trying to make such an outrageous adult decision that a lot of adults would have problems, you know, mulling over, you know? And it was great. And it's a terrific Scooby Gang thing. And it's an excellent story. I highly recommend it for everyone at any age. And I want to read it again. So I'm going to the bookstore tomorrow. And if I see it on a shelf, it's mine. It's really wonderful.
You know what, Bill? That's really cool, and I think maybe there's also an element of when you grow up, it's kind of your brain gets distracted and cluttered with so much bullshit and minutia that just, you know, things you have to commit to be an independent adult, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you're a kid, it's more like you're, I don't know, maybe there is something Bradbury was getting at about how your motives are much more emotional and maybe much more pure because they're not obstructed as much.
Yeah, that, and plus I think especially with young people, you know, it's like, I'm gonna be okay, you know, I'm immortal, you know, you feel invincible, you know. If anything bad's going on, your parents are gonna run interference and all that crap, and then when you start adulting, you know, it's like shit, man, this sucks, I wish I was a kid again. But and to like have that, like, wow, mom and dad can't save me. I got to save my buddy, and the only way to do it is for me to give up a year of my own life. Yeah. And your parent isn't there to say, well, let's talk about this, you know, Johnny or Billy, and let's figure out if this is the right thing for you to do. It's like, oh man, I've just grown up now, and I got to figure stuff out.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And we've seen that. My gosh, I forgot the young man's name. It just escaped me. But he was the young boy at the school shooting in Florida who, 15 years old, he braced the door with his own body to protect his classmates. And the scumbag shot through the door. He took 5 rounds in his body. The kid lived. But I'm like, he's not 15. He's not a teenager. He's not a boy. That's beyond a man right there. I mean, he reacted like I would like to think anybody would in that situation, you know, to help other people, you know, that's like, that's something in his character, like, you know, not to hesitate, to take action and to risk his own life to save 20 other people.
Yeah.
Wow. That's insane. You know, it's like, if I have a Scooby Gang, I want that guy. You know, like, I want that guy on my team. You know, it's like, yeah, Evil Ed, you're out. What do you mean I'm out? You are out. You know, it's like,
get your sarcastic comments out of here.
Yeah, get it, beat it, you know. And, you know, and I got choked up when I saw him in a hospital, you know, cops visiting him and all. I remember the picture. Forgive me for not remembering his name. And I'm going to find out his name and I'm going to put it in the show description. But,
cool.
But yeah, it's like, how do you know you can do what you do? I mean, if you read, there are books on anyone who's won in the United States, anyone who has won, and I don't mean to say who's earned the Congressional Medal of Honor, the highest military award you can get in this country. If you read their stories, like it gives an account of what they did to earn this award. And, you know, a lot of them are awarded posthumously, and you'll read some of these things, and as I've read so many accounts to the point where I was shaking and I couldn't read anymore. It's like these guys knew that they were not going to live.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like, could you know? But they, a lot of times they ran interference or drew fire, or in one instance, these two guys were fighting a fire in the magazine in a ship, and that means that's where all the gunpowder is to launch you know, the bombs and stuff, launched the guns. And I remember these two guys were like, you know, they're fighting this fire, and just so they could get other people could rush in and get their other wounded sailors out. And I'm like, it's gonna blow, and that's what happened. But because they did that for half a minute, you know, all these other guys were saved. And it's like, could you stand there knowing that you were going to die?
Yeah.
Could you do that? And I think this is part of that Scooby Gang element, that you're hoping that there's you'll be able to stand up. You'll be able to do something to help somebody else. You'll be willing to show that, you know, I could sacrifice me or part of me to help somebody else, because all human life has value. You know, all life has value. And I think that's why I really love Scooby Gang stories. And that's why I loved Buffy the Vampire Slayer so much. No matter how corny some of the characters might have been, no matter how immature they might have been in the beginning, you know, like Xander, like, you know, he's like, you know, a little goofy and all, but man, he'd lay himself down for anybody, you know. And Willow being so mousy and nerdy, and she remained nerdy, but she became a woman. And it was just great to see over 7 years, these people, you know, willing to try and to make sacrifices and do something for not only the people they loved, but the people they didn't even know, which in the end was saving the entire, you know, Sunnydale from the Hellmouth, you know, opening up, you know. And and I think that's an important element to the Scooby Gang, you know, mythos. One for all and all for one. Totally Three Musketeers.
Bill, you summarized that so beautifully. I don't want to say another goddamn thing.
Damn, Johnny.
And I think that means it's time for Scream Outs, because I can't top what you just said. That was beautiful, wow, man.
Jeez, thanks. I hope the recording button's on. Oh, man. Okay, here we go. Scream Outs. These are wonderful, amazing souls that you could find on Twitter. So here we go. And I'm going to give you their Twitter handle name. And again, I am at the end of a show without liquid, so I hope I don't screw it up again. Elena Koshka, XOXO. And who is she? She's a wonderful model, a fantastic soul. You could follow her under that same name without the XOXO on Instagram. And she's also part of John, not Johnny Num, but John at matrixmodels.com. Check her out. Rare Horror. We love, review, and share all things horror, and that's why they're cool. And where are they? They're in Canada, the United States, and the UK. That's how cool they are. Go to their website, Rare Horror. The wonderful soul, Matthew Lopez, and you can find him at Matthew6696691. He's a big pro wrestling fan. He's into comics, superheroes. He loves Doctor Who, Arrow, The Flash, all that cool stuff. And you could follow him right there. And he's out of Manhattan, so love that, because I'm close to him. The great people at Scream Radio, and that's Scream without the E. And that is run by the queen herself, the awesome, the amazing Tracy _TR, who is a black horror chick who's into girl power. And she's streaming great horror radio. So go also to their website, Scream Radio. Again, no E in Scream. Isaac Thorne. Isaac R. Thorne, to be precise. He's a dark comic horror writer. He's out of Franklin, Tennessee. Go to his website to learn more at IsaacThorne.com. And also check out his work on Scream Radio, also The Horror Cyst, and TN Horror News for reviews. The Excellent Souls, again, a lot of great souls today. Promote Horror. Welcome to PromoteHorror.com, where we bring creators of horror and horror fans together. Our goal is to help hashtag spread the horror. And that's exactly what they do. They're out of Miami, Florida. Again, go to their website. It's fantastic. Nathan Strack, STRACK, actor, writer, producer, founder, owner of Strack Web Design at StrackWebDesign.com. And also Helen Space. He's out of LA. Go to NathanStrack.com. Man, Mark and Christian, we love you guys at Cryptic Pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're the independent motion picture production distribution company focusing on original material, like their award-winning Mortal Remains, which Johnny and I cannot recommend highly enough.
Go to their website. Buy like 100 copies of it.
And give it to everybody. Grandma, here's Mortal Remains.
Just start sticking it through people's mail slots.
If you're cool, you will do that. And go to website crypticpictures.com. The phenomenal Ron Gizmo. He's retired and loving it. He's also a writer, well-established author, and poet. And go to his website, ronshawmedia.com. And also, just like Isaac R. Thorne, go to amazon.com and check out what they have there. Oh, man, this place is so cool. Dread Central for news, interviews, contests, and more for horror fans around the world. And you can contact them directly at info@dreadcentral.com or go right to their website, dreadcentral.com. The phenomenal, the beautiful Simona, S-I-M-O-N-N-A, actress. And she's a singer, radio host, model, TV personality. Absolutely fantastic. She's out of LA as well. And go to Simona.tv for more. Two more, Johnny. Actually, three more. Heavyweight Chumps. I just added one in my head. Heavyweight Chumps. And that's Mad Fat Loud. Pop culture and pro wrestling podcast from a fat fellas. Our co-hosts are vets of pro wrestling whose opinions are as understated as a chair shot. And you can check them out on SoundCloud. I was talking to this wonderful gentleman before the show, the great Greg Palko of Palko Designs, and he's just fantastic. Check out his work at palkodesigns.com. If you're into horror and you love killer horror art, he is the man. And finally, a woman who needs no introduction, Little Miss Risk. Who's that? That's Tristan Risk, the high priestess of the lowbrow. And you could also find her at Sweet Soul Burly Q and Circus Darling with A Caravan of Creeps. And she's the Penthouse D.E. Pet and Beatrice Johnson from American Mary. So those are my scream outs, our scream outs, Johnny, for the night.
Nice, Bill. Very nice.
Part of our Scooby gang.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Well, where can people find you, my friend, on the wide world of the internet?
Thank you. You could find me on Twitter at Crash Palace, also on Instagram as Billy Crash, and you could find links to this show and much more, including articles from our own Johnny Numb, at CrashPalaceProductions.com. Johnny, what about you, sir?
You can find my movie reviews also, in addition to Crash Palace, at loudgreenbird.com. Mm-hmm. And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies.
Yes, indeed. And Loud Green Bird, man, just also just fantastic. Check out what Frisco Kid TX is doing there. You will not be disappointed ever.
Yep, and Dixie Fairy, Kim McDonald.
Yeah.
Great people.
Dixie Fairy is just too... We have to drive south. We have to go on a tour, man.
Billy, we need to get her on the frickin' show already.
I was just going to... Let's get her on for the menstrual show. That doesn't sound
Don't
right.
Don't read anything into that, Kim. Don't None read anything into that.
I have issues. I need help. let's get Kim on. Talk to Kim, man. Let's get her on for something.
Yep, I'll get that in the works.
Awesome, bud. So that's it. So I hope wherever you are, you have your own cool Scooby gang. I hope Johnny and I are included in it. And I guess that's it. Good night, Johnny.
Pulling my Scooby mask back on, Bill.
wrong dog.
Let's get out of here, Billy.
Zoinks.
All right, see ya, man.
All right, jinkies.